Today we're focusing on another element of the city's comprehensive plan, facilities and infrastructure. The city is in the process of reviewing and updating its comprehensive plan, which will guide development in Lee Summit for the next 20 years. Let's get to it. I'm joined today by Director of Development Services, Ryan Elam, City Traffic Engineer, Michael Park, and Assistant Director of Engineering Services for Water Utilities, Jeff Thorne. Thanks for taking the time to be on the podcast today.
Thanks for having us again.
Thank you.
So the element we're focusing on today is facilities and infrastructure. The stated goal for this element is to sustain and enhance public facilities and infrastructure to protect the finest quality of life. So what infrastructure is needed to support the community's vision for the future?
That's a really broad question to know what infrastructure is needed, because so many different things fall into that infrastructure category that really support day-to-day life. As a society, you know, we need to have clean water. We need to have a way to deal with our waste. We need to have good roadways that enable us to get around, get places, goods to be shipped, and things like that. But we also need good healthcare infrastructure. We need good park infrastructure. We need good safety infrastructure. So a lot of different things can go into that infrastructure category there, and they all play a vital role in supporting our daily lives and our daily day-to-day activities.
Looking at the most recent citizen satisfaction survey, we had about 57% of respondents say they were satisfied with the overall maintenance of streets, municipal buildings, and facilities. But that was down from 67% when the survey was done in 2013. What do you think caused the drop-off, and how can we get that number higher again?
Getting a snapshot on a 4 or 5 year cycle is really difficult to discern where our performance is exceedingly well or is lacking. And it also has little to do with the timing of the survey and when it's taken. Normally, as in the 2013 and 2008 citizen surveys, they were done in the very late spring, early summer. This survey from 2019 happened to be done right in early February, as we're experiencing probably the worst time of snow removal operations and other maintenance issues on our streets, where it tends to be a lot more likely to have potholes. And so the timing of the surveys, if they're more consistent, we'll probably see a little better results. The other is, I think you got to get into a little more deeper question within the survey. So when you look at overall maintenance of city streets and facilities, looking in deeper to whether or not they're talking about all city streets or all roadways, which would include MoDOT, and what are within our control to maintain. As I looked into a few of the survey questions comparing 2019 to 2013, we actually had really high remarks on maintenance of streets and sidewalks. And so there's certain infrastructure that maybe get a bad rating, and we had a minus 8% or a drop in satisfaction of 8% when it came to snow removal. We had a drop in satisfaction when it came to transit. And then all of those negatives, in this case, offset in the overall satisfaction rating. But we had a number of elements within our transportation system and infrastructure that were rated really high.
Well, Michael, you touched on MoDOT. With infrastructure, I know we often hear complaints about certain intersections, 50 Highway and 3rd Street's one. We hear complaints about certain right-of-ways. And a lot of those complaints are areas that aren't controlled by the city. They're controlled by MoDOT or some other entity. So how does Lee Summit work with MoDOT to fix some of these issues in the future to increase satisfaction?
Obviously, we don't exercise control over the state or any other jurisdiction, but we do work with them in partnership. So if we have a project that abuts their right-of-way and they have a project planned, we try to coordinate with that other jurisdiction. And so I'm going to talk a little more broadly, not just MoDOT, but we have other jurisdictions like Kansas City, Missouri. And so a project like Lee Summit Road, where we wanted to improve that road, it goes through Kansas City as well. We came up with a cost proposal and a partnership where we each paid for our own, but we got a continuous roadway segment built from Woods Chapel Road south into Lee Summit at Colburn. We also work with MoDOT on projects by coordinating development activity. So as we see a development application come into the city, not only do we look after the city's infrastructure to make sure they mitigate their impact, but We also coordinate with MoDOT to make sure they mitigate the impact to MoDOT system. And then we've got other examples of where we partner with MoDOT, whether it's through a development project and we apply a TIF or a tax increment financing plan or TDD to actually improve the state infrastructure. We do cost shares. There's cost share money through the state DOT that we will apply for and will compete with other municipalities to improve the state infrastructure within our community. And then lastly, I'll just say that, you know, we've even gone to the extent of paying entirely for improvements on the MoDOT system by agreement with MoDOT. We're allowed to go on and do that. Most recent example is the 291 South Junction at 50 Highway. And so in that case, we went to the voters and we said, here's a very critical piece of infrastructure for the city. We know it's not cities, but it supports our businesses and our residents, and it accommodates so many vehicles and trips. And it was something that the residents overwhelmingly supported. They passed a bond issue. And in that instance, the city did pay for it. But in any case, we do work on the state right away. It's done by agreement. And we don't just go out there willy-nilly and take care of their stuff. We don't clean up their right-of-way or patch potholes or do striping. And so that's the manner that we do participate with MoDOT. We work with them. And another point I'll make is when we do have these projects that are joint projects with the state, a lot of times they are conveying some of the maintenance responsibility by agreement to the city. And so like the example of 291-50 and South Junction Interchange, we add sidewalks. And a lot of that sidewalk infrastructure, the state is saying, all right, we'll put that in, city, but you're going to have to maintain it. And we do that. And it's usually minor maintenance like sidewalks, some markings, maybe some signing. But there's certain things that the state just will not relinquish. And we don't want to control, like signals or some lighting on their highways. They just won't give it to us and we don't want it either.
Well, building on that, has the city considered acquiring some of these, I guess, more controversial areas where we get a lot of complaints with right-of-ways or intersections so that the city has more control on the look of that section?
No, we haven't really. We don't have the funds to take over somebody else's challenges and issues. As I had mentioned, sometimes we'll enter an agreement as kind of a condition of a project we're partnering with MoDOT that we'll take over some routine maintenance like mowing. But we don't really go to MoDOT and say, hey, we're willing to take on all this additional infrastructure to maintain when we've got a whole lot of infrastructure that really we can't afford to maintain at a certain level of service either. It just doesn't make sense for us to approach MoDOT with that. There are some roadways we have taken, like I said, under joint partnerships. Blue Parkway is an example where we build an interchange or a development comes in and wants to relocate the roadway. MoDOT takes that opportunity as a condition of the project to say, you'll take this outer road, and we do. I mean, sometimes we make those decisions where the value of the improvement or the value of the development is worth the city taking over that responsibility.
I think with any of that, there has to be a balance associated with it. It has to make financial sense for the city long-term and the residents long-term in order to take on that additional responsibility. So it's a balancing act on that responsibility.
Absolutely. And the other side of this is, as I know that Michael and them do well, and we deal with this a little bit, is if we get a resident call for a jurisdiction and we have water systems that aren't in our jurisdiction and that kind of stuff currently that are inside the city of Lee's Summit, we need to make sure they're informed to know who they should be calling, because their voices are very important to us and they're important to MoDOT as well. And if we want changes to happen on other systems and that kind of stuff, we need those voices to reach the right ears so that they prioritize things. So we're also trying to make sure we're communicating to the residents who they should be talking to when it's not our infrastructure.
And I'll say, Eric, you mentioned more of the aesthetic or the visual element of MoDOT's right-of-ways and highways. And there are areas where we don't take over maintenance responsibilities, but we'll license portions of their right-of-way to do beautification. And the two gateway monuments into Lee's Summit on I-470 are examples of those, where the city is taking the initiative to really improve the view of that corridor coming into the city. And we do that by licensing the right-of-way. Basically, they grant us rights to be there. And whatever we put in, like those gateway monuments, we maintain. Other projects have been done in a similar way along either 291 or in some of the big interchange areas where they got a lot of opportunity for landscaping. And I know our Parks Department has also partnered with them to do plantings to just try to make it look more visually appealing. And then MoDOT, I just remind some of our residents, they do have Adopt a Highway programs, litter control programs that businesses can join in, similar to how the city has Adopt a Street programs for kind of cleaning up the right of way.
So I want to touch on water a little bit. In that same survey I mentioned earlier, the Citizen Satisfaction Survey, the majority of residents were happy with the maintenance of sewer and water systems and the reliability of the water service. How do you maintain that high quality of service in the future?
We maintain it by trying to do consistent planning and maintenance work. We're currently undertaking a wastewater master plan to be looking at our wastewater system for the next 10 to 20 years. We're working on that with the comp plan and with the development folks to do that, to look to see what the needs are today for our current users and what our needs are will be for future users, so we don't impact those current users by putting in future use. We've had a really good luck with our planning on that. We'll be kicking off a strategic plan for the department as well to look at major initiatives and that kind of stuff, and we try to get public input for that. We have a public body that we answer to, the Water Utilities Advisory Board, which is made up of residential customers, our major industrial users, things like that, to get input back from them as we look at how we're dealing with the needs of the systems and that kind of stuff, and coordinating our work with the existing system and the development community. The biggest factor in our current satisfaction for people who live here now is our operations group, and they just do a great job of staying ahead of issues in our system, making sure that it's operating properly and bringing up concerns so that we can design projects to head off anything that might be a problem in the future.
I'll add a little bit on the continued planning for the water and the wastewater systems. You know, one thing with that is learning from the past that, you know, all of the operational information that is gathered from the long-term operations of these systems go into the design requirements for the future to improve those the newer systems to hopefully reduce the maintenance burden going forward. There's always maintenance costs and always maintenance activities associated with it, but I think it's really important the way that we're able to learn from things that have gone in the ground already and then adjust as we move forward and adjust those standards to make sure that we're preventing problems from occurring in the future.
So stormwater is another topic that comes up quite a bit. There are some areas in the city that do see flash flooding when we do have heavy rains in the city. How can the City of Lee's Summit address this as we continue to think of ways to improve Lee's Summit?
Well, stormwater happens to be one of, I think, our biggest infrastructure challenges in the city. And I know you'll probably wrap up this podcast with the question of what we see is the biggest question regarding infrastructure still facing us. And I would just say we do experience some flash flooding on our roadways. It's some few locations from time to time on major events, but we also still experience some structural flooding. And we have a whole system of stormwater infrastructure that is degrading and needs a lot of maintenance. And stormwater is an issue that the city has been researching and looking at for decades. I mean, we can look back multiple citizen strategic plans and see stormwater as a major initiative that needs to be addressed. We've been working through staff at the city. We've worked through elected officials over multiple generations of elected officials. And we have worked with the citizens, and whether that's individually through projects or citizen task force. And the general consensus is we need to identify the possibility of a stormwater utility, a mechanism for us to go out and not only inventory to see what is the scope and scale of the stormwater issue that's all underground. And some of these happen to be more on streamways and bank stabilization issues. But we don't even know really the size of the issue that exists. And then to have a funding mechanism in place for us to go out and address it. In the interim, we're we're kind of just fighting fires. We're dealing with these stormwater challenges with very little revenue. We don't have a dedicated source of funds to go handle stormwater. And so as an example, what we've done is allocated a certain percentage of the transportation or capital improvement sales tax towards stormwater improvements and mitigating some of the areas of where we have metal pipe that's deteriorated and rusted out, much like some of the water lines and sewer lines that Jeff refers to. And roughly $20 million over the next 15 years to address that. And that's what we're working through, is designing some of these projects. And I'll tell you, $20 million only scratches the surface of the stormwater issues that exist.
I'll add to the just stormwater in general is one of those topics that has changed over time. And what I mean by that is the way that engineers and contractors have addressed stormwater over the years has changed significantly. It never even used to be thought of. I'll just say back when the city was first developing, stormwater was an afterthought. It was get it away from your site as fast as possible. Then it became, okay, let's concrete all the ditches and concrete everything, which again gets everything to go faster. That's shifted to, well, now you need to store your water on site and release it out slower. And that's even shifted from moving into more regional type approaches and more what we call low impact development type items to address different storm events that occur. The storm events themselves, the data that was used to estimate those events has changed. And that's kind of changed the whole approach to stormwater across the country. This isn't unique to Lee Summit. This is a national and global issue. But I think some of the things that we can do and we have been doing, is focusing on more frequent storms as opposed to just focusing on the large rain events. But making sure that we've got adequate space to handle the large events as well, and shifting more to that regional stormwater, that watershed-based analysis is really important, I think, moving forward. There's a trade-off with that, though, because that means you have less developable land. Because quite honestly, you need to keep a certain portion of the land set aside to help deal with those stormwater systems in a more natural way, through a more natural environment. One of our big problems right now, we have a number of creeks. We have a lot of different creeks in Lee Summit and stream degradation. A few years back, we put into place a stream buffer ordinance, which helps with that because it allows the stream to move naturally. But there are several areas in town where there are homes that are directly backed up to a creek that is going to have some stream degradation issues where the bank is going to fall off and slough off and kind of eat away as the natural progress of those streams moving. So there are a number of different things. Stormwater is a very complex issue is one of those things that nobody thinks about on a day-to-day basis unless it's raining outside, but it's incredibly crucial to how we continue to develop as a community and how we then retrofit the different areas that we've got right now.
Stormwater touches all of it. It impacts the water utilities department. Where we have stream crossings, where there's stream degradation, we get exposed pipes in there, and we're out there trying to relay line and move line to get it away from a creek that's coming undone. When the creeks leave their banks, when we see flooding, that water's got to go somewhere. It ends up going into our sanitary sewer at times, causing downstream impacts for us and capacity issues and backups and overflows in the sanitary sewer. So the stormwater issue is a big deal, and it touches things that most people don't even see.
Yeah, as Ryan and Jeff had mentioned, stormwater has a very broad impact on everything in the city. And we have been updating all those standards, but it must remain a top priority, a high priority in our comp plan and the city strategic planning. We have to stay focused on really addressing the long-term needs of stormwater, the long-term infrastructure needs and maintenance needs of stormwater, as well as continuing to move towards really viewing stormwater as more of just rainwater and a resource or an asset necessarily to the community and not something that's just so adversary. that we're just trying to get out of the way, get off our site. But some of those standards that Ryan was referring to are also evolving into more water quality standards as a way we treat the storm water so it can be reused and applied on site as opposed to just trying to dispose of it.
So shifting a little bit, we want to talk about facilities also. City's pretty fortunate in that most of our facilities are new or in the process of being upgraded. City Hall is fairly new, maintenance facility, water, our fire stations are being upgraded. Do you see areas of improvement for facilities that could enhance services or possible areas of expansion as the city grows, especially with the PRI land that we'll be opening up?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we are in a pretty fortunate place that we have a lot of buildings that are, you know, right at, you know, 20 years old, 15 years old. So the structure itself is in great condition. Now, when you get to a facility of that age, some of the components start to become an issue or concern, particularly large HVAC systems. Technology upgrades that didn't exist when the building was originally built, things along those nature. We're really monitoring a lot of that, and we've got a lot of HVAC needs, heating, ventilation, air conditioning needs at some of our larger facilities, you know, City Hall, the maintenance facility, animal control, the police department. Right now, that building's right at 20 years old, and it's going through a pretty significant renovation right now to address security changes and layout changes and just changes that have occurred over the last 20 years. I think I mentioned it before, you know, even in the last 10 years, the way that people work has significantly changed. And now with COVID-19 and the pandemic response, there's a possibility that the way people work is going to change again. There's been trends to go, you know, smaller footprints, and there's been trends to go bigger footprints. That's all still going to be worked out. But the one thing about that is that we know is that the way that people work is going to change, and the buildings are going to have to be adaptable to that.
When you mentioned adapting as technology changes, animal control kind of kicked off the city's efforts to go green. They installed solar panels to help power that facility. There's more plans for solar panels on other facilities within the city and other city properties. How else can the city become more energy efficient and go green?
Yeah, so the use of solar power has been and will continue to be a kind of a cost calculation. There's a point where it breaks even and a point where it starts to pay off. Associated with that. That's been true since solar energy started coming about, and it's getting more and more efficient every year, just as technology advances. But the biggest energy consumption, the biggest energy uses in our buildings is our HVAC systems. An old HVAC system will use considerably more energy than a newer HVAC system. We have, when we built new facilities in the Water Utility Service Center, is one of the most recent large buildings. We haven't gone for a LEED certification on any of those buildings. However, we've incorporated LEED principles in those, using energy efficient windows and energy efficient appliances and different materials and things like that through that. Same thing with fire station number 3. And then we've got a couple other fire stations that are going to be in the design process as we move forward.
As Ryan said, we did look at a variety of different things on the water utilities facility. And the bottom line of it all is for the city and for our customers and citizens is that it has to pencil out. Okay. It's gotta make sense financially that there's a payback. We can't just do it for the sake of doing it because it does add cost to that. So we incorporated natural daylighting. We incorporated, efficient windows, lower VOC paints, some of that kind of stuff, but we did not pursue a full LEED thing. We looked at the HVAC and went with the most efficient one that we could afford that based on the efficiency we had and the cost for the next level penciled out, and we got the best bang for the buck we can do that. Now when you talk about facilities on the water facilities side, on the water utility side with our facilities, it isn't just that building. we've got, you know, pump stations and water towers and things of that nature. Some of our big electrical users are those pump stations. We have a couple thousand horsepower and pumps sitting at some of these things. And when they kick on, it's a considerable draw. So we look at using variable frequency drives to ease those things on, to not create such a big spike in lug where we have to pay for the big cost at peak times. And we work to minimize those costs. The efficiency and the electrical usage of those types of facilities can be quite substantial.
I'll just say the energy or emissions and going green extends beyond the buildings to our infrastructure. And so whether that's us using recycled materials on pavement jobs or using permeable pavers like we did on the new parking lot at 4th and Main, that really have an environmental component to it. You know, there's other opportunities that will continue. We're in process of changing out street lights from high pressure sodium lamps to LEDs, where we can see a reduction in energy consumption. We're trying to better coordinate our traffic signals to limit the stops and a delay that's associated with vehicles, which also impacts energy use and emissions in that area. I would just say that there's all sorts of technology advancement that help us get there too. And so you've heard some of the technology in buildings and better space management. But if we've got more remote capabilities to work and access some of our infrastructure, and Jeff had mentioned some of our pump stations and towers and facilities, we have all kinds of infrastructure on the public works side, like traffic signals and street lights, that if we have more remote management, one, we're reducing the manpower and time it takes to do a response for maintenance. To maybe opportunities where we look at our street lights and do we leave them on all night? I've seen some communities where they're starting to make more value choices, and is it worth spending several $100,000 a year for that time of day when very little or very few people are out walking around at 2 or 3 a.m. When they really get the benefit of street lights? So I think there's opportunities for us to investigate further where more savings could be found.
How would you all rate our facilities and infrastructure looking at it today?
I think the transportation, comparably to other communities, even those within our region, is pretty well. But as we started this podcast with citizen surveys, I would like to get more frequent surveys so I can really ascertain where our problem areas are, where the public perception of our problem areas are, so that we can improve it. I think there's always opportunities for improvement. And that citizen feedback is one thing I would like to match with more data-driven assessment. So, and I'll give the example of, there might be big complaints on snow removal, but our data is saying that we're meeting the expectation of the council adopted snow operation plan. You know, we've got the streets cleared within 48 hours for a certain phase of that implementation. But if the public's not happy, we've got a mismatch of, one, the plan, and the data that's showing we're meeting those goals, and the public perception that says they're not happy with it. So I think we just need more citizen feedback. And the only way to really get that is through snapshot surveys or citywide citizen surveys on a more frequent basis. And then to marry all that up, their feedback with the actual data that we obtain on our infrastructure. And that pertains to transportation mostly, but it probably also applies to water utilities and development.
On the water side, I think if you talk to our staff in that, we'd like to see the metrics we look at are more issue centered. So if it's a break rate, how many breaks do we have per mile of line per year? How many backups do we have in this on the sewer side? How many, you know, things like that? And then what are our costs like to our customers? We have a water rate that's actually in the probably lowest third of the metro area. And we also have one of the lower break rates in terms of water main breakage in the area. But our group, our goal is to have no breaks, right? So we think comparatively we do pretty well, but we're never quite satisfied with that. So we're working hard to even improve on that, and then to do so with a fiscal responsibility that keeps our rates competitive with our peers.
Yeah, I think in general, our infrastructure is good. I think that we've put a number of things in place to ensure that continues. That being said, I think that as we grow, as we age, we have to constantly be focused on that so we don't end up getting into a situation where we've built more than we can sustain. So, or we're not able to provide what it is that the citizens are really looking for, or that the residents are really looking for, the businesses. Again, I mentioned it before, it's a bit of a balance, but I also think that we need to keep infrastructure in mind as it is your roads, it is your pipes, it is your water, it is the electricity, it's the things that you can't see, but it's also the public safety aspects. It's also our park system. It's all of those things that support the quality of life. So I think we have a great quality of life here, and I think our charge is to continue that great quality of life and continue to move forward as we grow and do that in a way that takes care of what we have and make sure that we're able to continue taking care of things in the future.
Well, and we'll end with this one. What do you think is the biggest question that needs to be answered as the city looks to the future regarding facilities and infrastructure?
Gotta be, how do we continue to maintain the level of service that we provide? We do believe, and I think we can prove out that across the board, as Ryan said, the city of Lee's Summit provides a high level of service. That said, that level of service costs a certain amount and takes a certain amount of effort to do. And as we grow, we need to make sure we have a plan to provide that level of effort so that service can continue and we aren't disappointing our customers and constituents.
I agree. You know, I think we have a high level of service. I think our biggest challenge is going to be finding funding solutions that address our underfunded maintenance. And so as our system continues to grow, our infrastructure continues to grow, I have a concern that we don't have a sustainable funding source to meet that level of service demand. And as I mentioned earlier in this podcast, I think probably the greatest priority among all those infrastructures that we deal with in public works is stormwater. We have really no solution looking forward in the future, long term, how we're going to not only address the growing stormwater issues that we don't know about, but even, you know, some of those that we do know about, we don't have any way to fund those repairs to address those flooding issues. And I think it's only going to continue to get worse. And so we need to really kind of continue the work that had been done on stormwater moving forward over the last 20 years, make it a priority, and in some way we've got to address it. And to me, I think that's one of our biggest needs that are still outstanding.
Yeah, I think both Michael and Jeff hit it right there, but maintaining the level of service and then being committed to that, I think is important, is incredibly important. And when I say being committed, I mean being committed from a staff perspective, a resident perspective, a partner perspective, that we're all committed to ensuring that we are able to provide those high levels of service, which goes back to finding solutions for those big picture items that you maybe haven't been focused on in the future or haven't been focused on in the past. I also say that there's probably going to be things that come up that we haven't thought about yet. Things are going to change. We're going to have to be adaptable, but we always need to be focused on being able to deliver the highest quality of services possible. Whether that's some new technology that comes in into play that makes that easier, or some new technology that we have to accommodate. You know, we didn't talk about wireless technology or the fact that the cell phone network is a critical component of infrastructure and telecommunications and things like that. 5G is a big difference. There's more pieces of infrastructure that are going to be in place, more things to coordinate, but that it's something that absolutely is going to help move us forward into the future. But we got to make sure that we are balancing everything accordingly to continue to provide the high levels of service.
Well, I appreciate you all taking the time to do this today. And again, we want to hear from residents. So head to igniteourfuture.net. There's a survey available where you can give your opinions on infrastructure and facilities and join the conversation. Thank you, guys. Thanks for listening to the latest episode. Again, if you want to join the conversation, head to igniteourfuture.net. There are surveys available as well as a discussion forum for you to post ideas. Every voice counts.